right, welcome on back to another episode of the Culinary Road Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Melnick, alongside my good friend, Fred Mullins. Fred, great to see you again.
Hello, Chef. Hello, everyone.
So we have a great show coming up today. We have an old friend who's been now on our show. This will be his third appearance coming up. And, you know, not really a guest anymore. He's kind of honorary third seat.
He's brick and mortar in this virtual radio show thing building we built. Yeah. Podcast, whatever.
You are aging yourself.
Oh, just how do I send an email again?
Yes, on this radio show that we have.
This radio show we have. Hang on, I'm getting a telegraph. Just a second. Garrett's messaging me.
So we have Garrett Vandermolen, who anyone who's listened to the show before knows that Garrett was our first ever guest. He was also our last guest.
Yeah, he bookended season one. Yeah.
Yes. And then here we are, season two. We decided to have him back on because of the topic that we're discussing. You know, we both wanted to have him on to discuss, you know, the topic we're going to be talking about in a little bit, which we'll get to in a little bit. Looking forward to our conversation with Garrett and, you know, kind of how we get into that. We also have to tackle our top three.
Tackle. Yes.
Nice. See how I did that?
Nicely done.
So our top three, as all of our listeners know, every week we do a different top three topic. And we're in the midst, right in the middle of football season at this point. Mm-hmm. Whether it's college or pro, you know, whatever you like to watch. And we're talking American football, not that stuff they do overseas. That makes more sense to be called football, but that's for another discussion.
Welcome to the United States, folks.
Exactly. So we are in the midst of football season, and we want to do our top three football food.
Yeah. It's so a good one.
That's, you know, football foods. They can get pretty intense. They can get pretty in-depth.
Right? And the people can get really specific about whatever it is they're making. A lot, like we've had that discussion about barbecue, right? No, that's not how you do it. You got to do it like this.
And it's also very regional. Regional too. And if your team sucks, then nobody really cares.
The more your team sucks, the more food and the more booze is involved. So is that a bad thing?
Maybe not.
Right? I'm of the mindset that most people who actually go to the games, they're fans, right? They want their team to win. They're there for them. They're there to eat and drink.
They're there for the tailgate. And even the people that host parties and stuff too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go exactly.
It's about the tailgating,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think when we talk about this list, we kind of need to keep it in that. It's sort of like in that idea, right? Because technically, you could have anything.
Sure.
You're watching the game, whatever you want. You could have a steak dinner if you wanted to.
Sure.
We're talking like the classics.
Right.
What springs to your mind first? So this is going to be tough because either your list is really long or really short. And mine's pretty short. And I know we're going to have some crossovers.
Absolutely. But we haven't actually talked about, I guess it was my topic, but I don't know whose turn it is, but I don't know.
Well, I'm going to go first.
You're going to go first.
I'm going to go first. I'm taking. I'm taking it. I mean, this is the only child in me coming at wings, man.
Yeah.
I had to. I'm sorry.
Sure.
So there's a million different ways to do them. But, you know, chicken wings, just, you know, whatever your favorite recipe is fine. We do ours a couple of different ways. Like if it's too crappy out, like when it's February and it's howling wind, or not February because it wouldn't be football season, but it's January, right? And it's howling wind. I'm not going to be out there on the grill. I like grilling my wings best, but my wife found a great came across a great little technique where we roast them in the oven. And she does this sort of like sweet, sticky, almost like Asian treatment on them. They've got like fried shallots on the top when we finish. And they're just, I haven't met a chicken wing I really didn't like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can do the classic buffalo style, which is what most people want to do. You can do teriyaki. You can do dry rub. You can do fried. You can do grilled. I love them. And it's chicken.
Right.
I would argue that's the most American food out there is chicken.
Yeah.
So especially I'm just throwing wings. That out there.
Because if you talk about chicken wings,
that's our culture.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, if you're talking to anyone in Europe, especially, I mean, I've had this conversation with Italians before where they're kind of, you know, like, what do you mean you have a whole pile of wings? What do you do with the rest of the animal?
We just throw it out.
Yeah, no, that's gone. It's,
we're
that's
done with that chicken.
Yeah, no, that we turned that into chicken parm. You don't do that.
Well, I have a question. By the way, there's a famous wine producer, really great guy. Every time he comes to the States, he has to have chicken wings. I'm not going to name names. I'll tell you when we're off air, but or air, whatever, when we're done recording. Here goes my age again. But I'll tell you who it is. It's super cool. Every time he comes over, he has to have wings.
Got
to
have the wings.
Such a cool little...
Wings was the no-brainer number one choice.
Totally. So do you have a favorite type of chicken wing?
Probably. I mean, I'd probably go with the... I mean, you got to go with the buffalo wing.
You're going classic, yeah.
Yeah, but my older brother, Sean... worked for Ming Tsai for a few years, actually. Mm-hmm. And he always made this Asian inspired wing. So anytime we have a cookout, my brother Sean always does his wings that, you know, he's got cilantro and lime juice and, you know, spice, yeah. And, you know, all kinds of stuff in there. So he's always the wing guy. He always marinates them. And then I end up being the one who grills them and cooks them up for the most part. But both my older brothers are very good cooks. So they're on the grill, you know, we kind of have to bump each other out of position. So, you know, I'm, you know, classic buffalo doesn't suck, but you know, there's those Asian style wings, which is a very vague term.
Cause there's a million different, broad flavor profile. You can do spicy, you can do sweet, you can do fried, you can do sticky, sesame seed coated. There's a million different ways to do it. Yeah.
So that's probably the top two, probably the one and 1A, buffalo, and then my brother when he does his wings, he always does a great job with it. So when you get Ming Tsai in the mix, it doesn't suck to have his recipes.
Well, I'm curious to hear your pick because where you are in that particular part of the country, you're in football land. I know they got certain traditions. I'm curious if it's on your list or one of the things they do is on your list.
So my number one on my list is actually a dish. The first time I ever had it was in Boston, and it's become way more popular since the first time I had it. Okay. It is buffalo chicken dip.
Buffalo chicken dip. Okay.
You've never had buffalo chicken dip?
No, I haven't. How do you make that a dip?
So you cook chicken breasts. Okay. Some people use canned chicken or whatever. We cook chicken breasts and shred it up.
The chicken? No.
I'm just telling you, that's how some people make it.
Oh, okay.
But all right. Anyway. Cook chicken breasts, shred it up.
Okay.
I mean, you can do it with chicken thighs or whatever, but if you just basically you're just cooking it and shredding it.
Almost like a pulled pork kind of thing, right?
Sure. Gotcha. And then, sure. Yeah, that. But then you're going to mix that with cream cheese.
Okay.
A little bit of ranch if you're in
naturally, yep.
Buffalo sauce.
Okay.
Put that into a casserole dish. Cover it with cheddar cheese.
And bake it. And then you just
scoop
and score?
Yeah, you dip it with whether it's tortilla chips or some kind of cracker or whatever. And it's buffalo chicken flavor.
Kind of makes sense. I haven't had it. I didn't know it was a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I really didn't.
Actually, my brother Sean's, one of his really good friends, Luddy, was the one that first introduced me to that, and that goes way back.
It sounds like the name of somebody who would invent that.
Yes, totally, absolutely.
Yeah,
Buck okay. Luddy, that's what we call him. So buffalo chicken dip, my number one pick.
I never heard of it. I'm curious enough to
make it next weekend.
Yeah, it depends who's on. You know, if it's those boring NFC matchups, I don't know if I'm into it or not.
Just put on the Patriots.
I think I just offended half of the 80 people that are listening.
I was walking around the grocery store yesterday or on Sunday with my Patriots shirt and my Patriots hat, walking through the grocery store in Pittsburgh. And, you know, I got a few looks, a few comments, a few things here and there. But
Belichick isn't exactly well-liked in that area.
Yeah, nope. But... that's fine. I like them.
You probably know that. But number two. So are we moving on to two?
Yeah, number two. What's your pick?
I kind of hung on a couple. But I'm saving. I'm going to switch the order for a reason. It'll make sense in a little bit.
Unless I steal it.
Well, if you steal it, you steal it. That's, you know, that's fine. I have to go with pizza. For me, it's pizza.
All right.
I mean, come on.
Yep.
Hey, take your,
that's you on my list. That's out. On my list. It's
you can make your own. I mean, it's great. Like, it's good hot. It's good cold. If you're angry, it still tastes good. You know what I mean? Wide right, the pizza's still gonna, it's gonna work. So I have to go with pizza. That's number two.
All right. Yeah. Any pizza in particular? I know we've talked.
Well, about I guess I'm going with current mood. You know what I mean? But sure, got a little pizza oven, so more of the classic Napolitana style, yeah. But margarita.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna dunk my toe in the water and maybe Detroit style pizza.
Detroit style. I knew that was coming back.
Come on, it's so good. It's focaccia with just more cheese and meat and sauce on it. It's delicious.
Crispy melted cheese on
the edge. Come on.
Yeah.
Folks, if you don't know what Detroit style pizza is, look it up. You'll thank us. It's dynamite.
And go back and listen to the episode in season one with Dave Merrill.
Exactly. And by the way, you don't have to be a Lions fan to enjoy it. It may help, but I don't think it matters.
Yeah, so I don't think being a Lions fan is really a good thing.
That's some tough sledding. Yeah, yeah. It'll get better one day.
Yeah, just not anytime soon.
That's the spirit.
All right, so yeah, pizza. Yeah, so you're going the classics. You hit the buffalo.
I'm totally
chicken wings and
down the line classics. Yep.
So I have a couple of things. You took two of the things I had on my list, but they were on the bottom of my list.
Oh, okay.
With the wings and the pizza, but my number two thing I have on my list is homemade salsa, but it has to be homemade.
I knew it. That was number three.
Yep.
But you're right. It's fantastic. It's so good. It has to be homemade.
Yeah. And tell me how you make your homemade salsa. What do you got?
Mine, I would say I got it from my stepfather who, when you have salsa, you're kind of like, it's salsa. You know, like, not like it's bad, but his was so good. It wasn't like, you know how they can be too liquid?
Yeah.
If you're not careful. So then it's like, it's fine. But then like your chip is just kind of wet and nothing sticks to it. You know, he chopped everything up so fine. So it was almost like on the edge of being like a pesto, or what you and I refer to as like a salsa verde, salsa rosso, that kind of consistency, but like a little jalapeno, just enough lime juice. And it was like savory, a little sweet, a little acid. And it was just perfectly balanced. And I could blow through a whole bowl in like 5 minutes, and I never really like salsa. Like I said, it was like ketchup. Like I'm gonna put ketchup on my burger or whatever.
Right.
You know, I didn't really pay any attention to it. And
on your burger or sandwich, you mean?
And I'm telling you right now, he taught me how to chop it. My burger sandwich. Yeah, nice. I tried to slide that one in, but he showed me how he did it. It's all about technique because it's really not that complicated. It's onions, it's tomatoes, it was some jalapeno again, lime juice. You can add a little salt if you want to kind of draw some of the flavors out a little bit. But it was how we chopped it. And then, basically, even though it sat in the bowl and even it had a little salt in it, it didn't become this bowl of soup. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like a spacho
in
half an hour. And like we make, my wife, we make a really good version of it, but it's never quite as good as Bill's, my stepfather, who taught us how to make that.
Yeah.
So it's dynamite. It's a great way to blow through like two or three bags of chips.
Exactly.
Crunchy. Come on. Yeah.
I think the key to besides using like fresh tomatoes, which I think
has to be all super fresh,
but I think the key is adding tomato paste.
You add tomato, interesting.
So that's going to give you that base. That's going to soak up some of that excess moisture from your tomatoes. Yeah. And whether you make your own tomato paste or buy some, so I made some earlier in the summer when my first tomatoes came through. I made a tomato puree. So I just blanched and shocked my tomatoes and pulled the skin off and then pureed it, put it in the oven 300 degrees until it thickened up. And that was the base of my tomato or of my salsa. And then I took my tomatoes, my fresh tomatoes that I picked from the garden, and I just pulsed them in my KitchenAid with green onions, like scallions, red onion.
Red onion is a nice touch.
Yeah, cilantro.
Yep.
Some jalapeno and cayenne fresh peppers that I also grew in my garden, and lime juice, and just pulse it until it's just. But with the tomato paste in there, and that's going to give it that.
It doesn't get too liquid.
Nope.
Interesting. Okay.
Because I mean, you know me. I'm a chef, so try to do everything by hand. I always chop everything, and but that's more of a pico de gallo kind of thing.
That's the mine probably is more pico de gallo and less salsa,
so,
but
so it, it's going to look more like salsa if you use a food processor,
right? Yeah,
and it's going to be easier too. But the key is that little bit of tomato paste. So just, you know, they get the, like the 3 ounce, 2 ounce cans, whatever it is of tomato paste, the small ones, just one of those for, you know, a dozen or a dozen and a half tomatoes, something like that.
Well, I would say not only is this the top three, but that's a pro tip.
Pro tip and top
three. Look, yeah, that's a bonus.
Look at me.
That's so overtime.
When people are voting on who had the top three or the best list of the top three, you gotta take that in consideration, folks.
Pro tip plus.
Yeah. Yes, pro tip plus. So that's
my we didn't talk about it, the chip of choice.
Well, I didn't get to that yet. That's only my number two pick.
Oh, well, they're to get, come on. Salsa on its own is not, no. Let me just with a spoon going, oh, salsa's delicious. No. Come on.
We'll get to that, but just a regular tortilla chip. I mean,
right, yeah.
You got the, you know, the ones that the scoops that the have scoops, the bowl, yeah. And you can just get, depends on how good your salsa is. If you want to get more salsa than chip,
right? See, I try to get I need the balance. I don't want too much. You're inevitably going to get more chip than not.
But if you can ever get, I mean, if you have a fryer or you have enough oil that you can make your own homemade chips,
a lot of work.
Yeah, it is, but. I mean, any kind of tortilla chip, you know, all the local grocery stores have their own chips and stuff, but just warm them a little bit and then put them out warm. I mean, it doesn't last that long. Any tortilla chip works in my mind.
It's just period. End of sentence.
Tortilla chip.
Any tortilla period. Chip. Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with you. Makes sense. It's kind of common sense.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So that was that's my number two. You're on to your number three now, all right?
Well, the chips and salsa. That was gonna be number three.
Well, pick another.
Yeah, I know. Three, so I'm hung up a little bit on it, but I'm gonna have to go with meatballs.
Yeah.
Put them on a sandwich, but you can eat them on their own, and you don't have to eat them in front of your fridge in your boxer shorts at midnight. They're great for watching the game.
But you could do both. You can do that later after the Sunday night game's over.
Exactly. Yeah. But you can do the meatball sub, which is classic, right?
Oh, yeah.
You can totally do that. Or you can just have them on their own. Like, you know, just take a toothpick and dig in. And, believe it or not, I was really close to saying pigs in a blanket, but I almost never make those. But I freaking love them. Yeah.
Because you can eat like six dozen of them.
That's the problem. And then it's just the whole, I'm taking a nap. I'm going to miss most of the game. I'm not going to do anything productive that day. So not that meatballs are a light food, but I won't go as overboard as I will with, well, they're miniature hot dogs. You know, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And I can eat a lot of hot dogs.
I've actually read recently that for every hot dog you eat, you lose 30 seconds off of your life. So,
and you know what? I'm fine with that.
Right.
And so what can I eat to balance that out?
Right.
Don't tell me kale. Cause
have
I'm
some
not
kale and call it a
I
day.
Knew you were going to say
Kale.
Speaking of kale, my third pick.
Worst pick ever.
Right. Boo.
All right, so we're going. So that's
real simple, meatballs. And you kind of serve them however you want. Yeah.
What what's your go-to meatball recipe?
What are you talking about, the blend?
Yeah, what kind of meat you use?
Pork, beef, and veal. You can find it. We're lucky enough we've got some good friends who own a butcher shop here in Kittery, and they've got like the typical blend.
Yeah. Oh, so you just get the pre-blended kind of.
Yeah.
Dry,
yeah, I'm not grinding at home. We're not doing that. And then, you know, we typically don't do a sauce necessarily. They're kind of pan fried and finished in the cast iron skillet. I will say if we do a sauce, you know, the something great to dip it in is the Ray's mustard from Maine, the sweet and spicy one. Kind of discovered that. There's a great little place called Duck Fat up in Portland. You actually put your fries in it, which I know sounds weird for French fries, but it's really good on the meatballs. It's kind of, it's almost like a sweet and sour kind of thing going on with them. It's delicious.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's still mustard, but you got that little element. That's my favorite way to have them.
Okay. Yeah. I would not throw mustard on meatballs, but.
I wouldn't think to do it, but. You're just kind of dunking it. You know, you're just getting a little, you don't want too much of it because it's pretty strong, but it works really well together.
And then you got the classic like breadcrumbs and eggs and
and a little bit of parsley. in there as well, some salt and pepper, and smaller. So you would refer to them as polpettini.
Right.
know, I don't like really big meatballs. I like kind of like that crust on the outside, which is why the cast iron skillet comes into play, because it kind of like that hard sear. So there's just a little bit of that textural difference. And when they're little, you can eat more and you don't have to feel bad because they're small.
Right. It's the same thing as the...
You're still eating 2 pounds of meat, but, you know, they're small, so who cares? Sure.
Yeah. You're just doing it in 32 bites instead of 16 bites.
Exactly. It's more fun. And you're working. You're working for it.
Right. So, yeah, you're burning calories. It's basically an exercise program.
By the way, when they're smaller, they fit between two pieces of bread way easier.
Yeah.
Of course, the sub roll is going to be perfect, but you got what you got around the house. You
can even throw in a hot dog roll at that point.
Well, yeah, you could. You
right.
got them.
Right.
Anyway, so that's pick three.
All right. Well, I have, as always, a number three and an honorable mention.
Of course you do.
I'm going to go with the classic chip. But
just like potato chips.
Yeah, gotcha. But I'm going Cape Cod chips, and I'm going sweet and spicy jalapeno chips from the Cape Cod Chip Company.
Oh, yeah. So you're just full on snacking.
Yep.
No,
I mean,
I'm watching the game.
I'm eating for 12 hours straight.
Right? That's a long game, man.
You got the whole Sunday slate. If I ever have a Sunday off, I'm watching the 1 o'clock games. I'm watching the 4:30 games. I'm watching the Sunday.
And then you got the Sunday night game. Yeah.
And then I'm watching the recap of everything that I just missed because I ate and drank too much all day. And I forget what actually happened.
Hey, you can also do that if you ever get a Saturday off, because college football could start at like 11.
Some of the college football games start at like 9 a.m.
It's nuts, right?
Yeah.
And then if you get the West Coast games, they start at like 11 our time and end up at like 2. It's crazy.
Right.
So you can go whole hog. I like it. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So
are you
when I think of football food, I think of that's an entire day investment of punishing your body. So
You thought I had high cholesterol before? I'll show you.
But I'm going like snack food that you can eat all throughout the entire day.
Yeah, and chips you can just kind of keep. Yeah. You can go back to that world.
Right. So I literally went dip and then dip and then chips.
Well, I was gonna, are you dipping those chips in the other dips that we talked
about? No, not typically with those ones, because they
but I'm not the potato chips and the salsa, but the buffalo thing, you wouldn't do the
potato. I mean I
too much
those. I would probably go, if I'm not doing a tortilla chip in the buffalo, I would probably go with like a Ritz cracker or a Townhouse cracker or something.
Ooh,
like
Ritz that. Cracker would be, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Or
so you're just doing the chips plain. You're not even doing like
a
clam dip or anything.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Got it.
Nope. Okay. However, if you go back to the buffalo dip,
mm-hmm.
at the end of the night, after you've
eaten,
drank way too much and you still have buffalo dip left over, get a soft tortilla and then put that.
I feel like this has come up before.
That's that buffalo chicken dip inside and then roll it up and you have yourself a little. And usually it's going to be cold and it's going to be in your boxes in front of the refrigerator.
You haven't had enough to eat already. You need more.
Oh, yeah. And it's not something that you really want to have, but it's one of those things that you just sort of feel like, well, there's a little bit left. I should probably eat that now.
I should try hurting myself just a little more before I go back to bed. I love it.
Yes. So I think that wraps up the top three, right?
Did you have an honorable mention? Did you mention
that? Yes. Oh, yes, I did. So just... honorable mention, again, I'm sticking with the chips and dip theme, but seven-layer dip.
Okay, yeah, you've tied it all together nicely. Yeah.
So seven-layer dip, I have one of...
Yeah, what are your layers? I've seen it varied a little bit. You got guac.
Seven-layer dip, and you don't necessarily need to count the layers.
No.
There's going to be, you know, there's going to be guacamole, there's going to be salsa, there's going to be cheese.
Meat, maybe. Yep.
Yeah, but... no one counts. It's just seven layers.
Is it seven layers? We don't know. We don't count.
Whether you have 5 or 9 or 15 or whatever, it's called seven-layer dip.
You're right. I've seen seven-layer dip where it's only been 4 layers. And it's
right.
Like, sure.
Right. Okay. Right. It's just like cheese, salsa, sour cream, and, jalapenos. That's not seven layers. But it's seven-layer dip.
Right. We're missing some folks. Yeah.
We just doubled up on a couple.
Yeah, I did two portions of the cheese. You weren't listening.
I was eating it all day, so it doubles.
Well, hey, I have an honorable mention.
And what'd you got?
This goes to your Cheez-Its.
Oh yeah, I mean Cheez-Its are the go-to snack.
I have a bit of a problem with Cheez-Its, which is why, just like Oreos, they're not in the house.
Can't be in the house. I don't bring them in the house. But if I do go with, I could eat the hot and spicy Cheez-Its.
Oh, those are my favorite. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with the classic or the white cheddar.
No, but I'll eat a whole box of those hot and spices, and I don't buy them for the exact same reason that you can't have Oreos.
Because I do the same thing you do. The whole box, ruined.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. I mean, you open that box, you're
not putting it back
in the recycling bin as soon as
it's not going back in the cupboard.
You want to hide that evidence from anybody around because you're embarrassed.
Get rid of the evidence. I love it.
All right, so that wraps up our top three. Our listeners, if you have your top three, or if we missed anything, shoot us a message on Instagram at culinary.rd at culinary road. But we have to move on with the show here, Fred. We have an amazing discussion, I think, with Garrett Vandermolen. It gets a little bit deep and a little bit heavy, but I think it's all in good light.
It's something that it's a subject that I think needed to be discussed, and having Garrett kind of be the third person to bounce our ideas and thoughts and opinions on it was really good. And he was a good person to bring in because he's been around the business for a very long time too. And it's nice to have his perspective. So
yeah, absolutely. So it's a little bit of a change from our normal concept of the show where we have, you know, a food and a beverage topic. We got Garrett coming in, and we're talking about something in the restaurant industry, and a topic that we wanted to discuss. And you know, we're changing up the format a little bit in season two here, but we'll have different guests and stuff. But sometimes it'll just be Fred and myself, and sometimes it'll be Fred, Garrett, and myself too, because he's kind of our honorary third chair. But looking forward to a great little conversation with him coming up in not so distant future.
Right, I call it a round table discussion, but since there's three of us, I guess it's a triangle table discussion.
Triangle discussion, yes, yes.
Anyway, on that terrible, terrible segue, we should let Garrett talk, or we should move on.
All right, so moving on to our discussion with Garrett Vandermolen. All right, welcome to the program, longtime friend of ours and multiple recurring guests, but now we're having him in, as we said, as our third chair, our co-host tonight, Garrett Vandermolen of Speed Fossil. And Garrett, great to have you on here again. Couldn't pass up an opportunity to have you come in and talk about the topic we wanted to discuss today, because it's something that I think is impacting the three of our lives for sure right now, and that's just the state of the restaurant industry. And that's why we wanted to have you here, because you deal with it firsthand just as much as Fred and I do. So to get a third perspective, thank you so much for coming on. Great to see you again.
Great to be here again.
Well, Garrett, full disclosure, we needed an adult to supervise. So thank you for taking that task on. So
I'm sorry you made such a terrible mistake tonight.
Right. And you were the only one we could come up with.
You were the only person we could find. So we ended up without an adult, but it should be fun.
One of the main issues with our industry is trying to figure out where the hell it's going right now. You know, obviously we've all dealt with a lot of bullshit in the last 2 years, and you know, we're still sort of in it and feeling all the repercussions of all of everything that's been going on. So I just kind of wanted to get a little more perspective from some other people that are also dealing with it and see how you're reacting and where you think it's going and what we need to do to fix this thing. I don't know, Fred, if you want to lead us off a little bit and just from
yeah, no,
from
your no pressure.
Yeah, but I mean, just from right. your perspective, just kind of yeah, give right. us a little bit of insight on some of the, obviously we've talked about some of the issues that we've been dealing with as far as distribution problems and staffing and all of those things. But let's just get into it a little bit.
Well, I mean, when I look, I don't know. I probably have a good 20 to 30 appointments, and just people, accounts that I call on quite a bit, but you know, I'm in and out of accounts, both retail and restaurant, but we want to focus on restaurant more than the other right now. And it's been the same theme since we kind of got our feet under us, I would say. Last summer, even though this thing was really in full bloom, it's easier to be outside. It was easier to social distance because the weather allowed for it. So, we had a fairly, and I do this in air quotes, normal kind of summer season up in upper New England, in particular Maine, because everybody comes here for the summer. But somewhere just either before or after 4th of July, you started to hear these rumblings like, just don't know if I'm going to have enough people. You know, and we were all kind of aware that a lot of places shut down, we're doing takeout only, didn't need all the staff, but we thought when everybody reopened their doors that, you know, people would come rushing back. It didn't happen. And it kind of felt at that time temporary, not kind of, it felt at that time very temporary. Like, okay, well, we just need to get through this. People are really getting tired of this. They're going to want to go out. They're going to want to work again. You know, the support they're getting, who knows how long that's going to last? Cause you know, there are a lot of question marks, but lo and behold, we're what, do I have my math right? What are we, 19 months in?
Yeah. Something like that. Too many to count at this point.
Yeah. And you know, that issue is worse than it was then, which is hard to believe. And it's not, obviously, you know, help is hard to find in general, but I don't want to argue. I don't want to put it that way. I feel like the restaurant industry has probably been the one that's been hit the hardest with that. People can't get front of the house help, meaning servers, food runners, bussers, bartenders, bar backs, you know, just whatever support you need in front of the house, people running the desk, the people managing, the pool isn't there. Like, right. Forget having like really talented people to choose from. And this is not slighting on anybody who's working out there, but you always wanted to hire the best people that you could for your restaurant. And that's, you just have to hire somebody, and you can't even just hire somebody now. You know, I've heard instances where people are paying $35 an hour for people washing dishes, people food running, you name it. Not that, you know, that it's an easy job, because that's a lot of work, but you know, before it was like 10 hours plus tips. If it was a dishwasher, it was a little different wage, but 35 an hour, and they can't get anybody to respond.
Right.
There's still nobody coming through the door. So then, you know, you basically take that problem. There's no one here to help wash the dishes. So it's the kitchen helping. It's whoever's in the front of the house helping. So now you can't serve as many people. It has this ripple effect. People are impatient, because we're all impatient right now. And it's just, I think the industry is hurting, and it's really, it's more raw now than it's been since I felt like when we all kind of got, when this thing slammed into us, you know, way back in, you know, March of last year. Right. And I hear it. It's about the only thing I end up discussing with a lot of restaurants. I don't bring it up, but it's the first thing that we come across, like, oh, I'm interested in this. I want to make some changes. But then it's like, you know, I don't know what we're going to be doing. Maybe it's just four nights a week instead of being the six or seven they were. And then it goes right into that conversation, just can't get help. And
right.
It's hard. That's not the only thing hurting it, but to me, it's the biggest problem. And I should probably let Garrett speak, because Garrett and I really have a very similar job. He covers a little bigger territory than me. And you spent a lot of time in Massachusetts, so maybe you're having, you know, it's a different, I think our seasons are flipped typically, although the Cape is pretty seasonal, but are you, I'm assuming you're experiencing the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the single biggest factor is personnel is the big thing, because there's no consistency anymore for anybody, right? You know, like you're talking about, it's like to get people to come in and do just a decent job, not a great job, but a decent job. You have to spend some money to do that these days. And there's just not a lot of people out there that want to get into this industry and want to be in this business. But the other part too, is I think that there's been like a really dramatic paradigm or demographic shift in terms of like the places that were, you know, rock stars in the food and beverage industry. You know, there's less of them now. Yeah. And the guys that were like kind of in the, you know, were the opening act part of that, were, you know, they would do good business and like they would count on like Thursday, Friday, Saturday to kind of get them through. And then if they had a stellar Wednesday or a great Tuesday, you know, awesome, you know, we're rocking. Well, the stellar Tuesday and stellar Wednesdays are gone. They're over. But yeah. The thing changes that like the Thursday, Friday, Saturday thing isn't consistent anymore, particularly in, I think, in the more, you know, urban areas, because there has been this kind of change in the way the general population goes out and goes out to eat, both where they go and also in their degree of patience to deal with this thing that we're talking about, where it's like, you know, I mean, it's not as simple anymore, because you've got people working in restaurants that are doing 7 or 8 different jobs where, you know, prior to the pandemic, they had 3 jobs. And you can see it. And I think it's wearing out a lot of what's happening there, you know, and that's my perception a little bit of what's going on. And I guess I see it a little bit, maybe I see it a little more because I'm in the Boston market, you know.
Yeah.
There is a difference. I mean, there's places that are doing okay, but there's a lot of places that are not. And that hasn't changed. It's gotten marginally better, but marginally better doesn't offset 16 months of being terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the other big things is the guests' expectations have grown. If nothing else, they've gotten bigger. So because people were stuck inside for so long.
Yeah.
So they're like, finally, I'm going to go out. And then they finally get a chance to go out because restaurants are all open and all that kind of stuff. And we have been for a while, but you go out and as we're talking about, there's 2 servers instead of 4 or 4 servers instead of 8 and, you know, 1 food runner or no food runners. And, you know, the bartender is also the hostess and the kitchen is also washing the dishes and stuff. So there's only so much that one person can do, but the expectations for the guests are, I haven't been out to eat in forever, and I want this to be the best experience that I've ever had at a restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah, right. No pressure, right? Yeah.
Right. So it's just like, it's this, it doesn't have the right balance of people understanding. Like when we were at Spello, I put up a sign that said, please be kind. Everyone here is working very hard to exceed your expectations while we are short staffed. And just to try to like put that in people's minds, yeah. we're all people and we're all trying to get through whatever we can, and just be kind, just be nice to people. Those guest expectations have not changed. They have changed. They've gotten higher.
I hate to crack a bad joke. I think people treat that like a yield sign. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many people really yield at a yield sign kind of thing, but you're right. It's basically you kind of put your hand on like, well, slow down. Nobody wants to be in this situation. We're doing the best we can, you know, so it'll take 20 minutes longer. Maybe you're here for 2 hours instead of an hour and a half, which is not a bad thing, but you know, it's just that is added to the tension and the exhaustion. You know, you can see it on people's faces. And my biggest concern is, and maybe I touched on it before because I talk a lot, but I'm worried about the permanent attrition that this industry is going to experience. I think Garrett said it, you know, how many people are, you know, they don't treat it like a profession, or they don't see it as a profession they want to be a part of. And that's it, where they were part of it. Now they're not coming back.
Right.
We're not going to be able to answer that question for a while. And that's a problem, you know,
but I think there is permanent attrition though. I mean, I think we can't answer it now. I mean, there's a lot of people that have left the business, mm-hmm. you know, because they were just like, okay, I don't need to do this anymore. I don't need to, you know, spend an inordinate amount of hours in this service position in this industry. And that's okay. But it's what it means is that we're going to see the shakeout that we've seen where there's, well, here's this place is closing, you know, places that are going to not be as business, because at the end of the day, every business still, whether you want to admit this or not, or recognize it, is a math equation, right? And the math equation is to have more on this side than this side. And if you can't, do that, then you can't continue to do that business. And there will be other things that will come and replace it, but we're losing some things that we love, you know? And I think all three of us have experienced that, you know, where businesses are gone. And, you know, sometimes it's, this is kind of a little non sequitur, but like I lost a place that I love to go shop in Watertown, this place called Russo's. Mm-hmm. It's been for like 100 years.
What? Russo's is gone?
They're gone. They closed on Saturday. They are done. Now, it's not because of the pandemic, but I'm sure that the pandemic contributed to it.
Didn't help, yeah.
Where it was a guy who's like, you know, he's 80 years old. He's been working in the family business since he was 10. Kids, the kids don't want to take it over. And he can get, you know, X amount of dollars for the property. And he probably looked at this changes in his business and everything's like, okay, this is it. This is time for me to get out. I mean, yeah. That's not quite the same as the industry, but it is an example of, I think there's a lack of permanence that we all kind of counted on a little bit in terms of like having our favorite places to go to.
Right.
There's this a place that we shop at or a restaurant that we go to that, you know, we fell in love with. We fell in love with the cuisine. We fell in love with the people there. We fell in love with the staff that was there and enjoyed it immensely. You know, these are people that made our lives pleasurable and gave us an escape of somewhere to go. And because of this situation and the mathematics of economic sustainability, a lot of these places are they're gone. They're not coming back.
Right.
You know, we may see things in the future that come and replace them, but that thing that you had, that thing that you loved, that was like kind of part of your psyche and your routine, it's gone, you know? And it's really tough to absorb that coupled with, like, you know, the other dynamic of people that go out and just don't understand the challenges of like running a business like that, that don't have the patience to like sit there and be like, okay, Jesus, you know, the guy brought me the wrong entree. I ordered this. And it's like, well, it's because the person that was, you know, in that position and that staff pulled the wrong thing and put it out to bring out to your table. Sorry, we'll replace it right away. But right. They have no patience to like, okay, I can take a deeper breath and I'll just get what I want. You know,
right,
that's
right. Exactly.
I'm rambling a little bit, but you know what I mean? Like,
Totally.
Absolutely. And obviously, as we're recording this show, I'm 2 days away from my restaurant closing. So those of our listeners that have been along for this whole ride know that I've been running Spello for the last 2 years almost. And, you know, we were one of the places that just couldn't make it anymore. By the time this episode's released, yeah, I'll probably be on my feet somewhere else doing something else. But you know, I'm seriously considering leaving the industry myself. And I mean, you both have eaten my food and, you know, been part of restaurants and everything that I've been a part of. And, you know, that's not a decision that I take lightly, but it's one of those things where I look at it and go, you know, what am I going to do? Jump into another restaurant right now and all of a sudden have, you know, the inability to hire a sous chef or a qualified sous chef and not have enough kitchen help and have no dishwashers and just get myself into the exact same situation that I just currently came out of. It just, I don't know, for somebody who's been in the industry literally my entire professional career, since I was 14 years old scooping ice cream, this is all I've ever done. And, you know, I'm looking at it with open eyes saying, maybe I need to do something else. And I don't know what that's going to be right now. Again, by the time we release this episode, I'll be on to my next venture, whatever it is. It may not be in a restaurant.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point. I mean, it's Garrett talked about it. It's extremely difficult to give somebody a good experience. I don't think people understand the amount of energy, talent, and time, and working things out, and fine tuning, and, you know, getting experience for somebody that's worthwhile, whether they spend a lot of money or not. Hospitality is a very difficult thing to achieve well, or do it well, or execute it well. And I did it for a very long time. You know, I did it since like the early 90s, and I transitioned into focusing on wine and selling wine to people as opposed to like always being on the floor. But those 80-hour weeks are real. People aren't saying that to inflate what they're doing. And then to take everything else that everybody else is dealing with, you know, the bad news, the constant, you know, COVID this, the variant that, you know, are we going to be open next week? And then these people are upset with me because it's taking 10 minutes longer. You know, we're all impatient, we're all exhausted. But, you know, at the end of the day, I decided I'd had enough before this came along. And I'm fortunate enough to have the job that I have. And I'm not going to lie to you, I was scared to death when this came along. And anything, you know, my situation could change tomorrow. You know, I doubt it, but it could. Nothing is solid or secure like it used to be. You know, it's an ever-shifting landscape. But I remember looking at my wife and saying, I don't know what else I could do. You know, this, I feel very fortunate. It's going to sound a little cheesy, but this is kind of a dream job. Mm-hmm. I worked really hard to get here and I got very fortunate, but I put myself in the right position and I worked towards this and it just happened to come up on my radar and I was able to get it. You know, there were a lot of people who wanted it and I was able to get it. And the thought that it could be taken away from me was kind of crushing. And Garrett and I don't want to speak for Garrett when I say this, but I'm not a kid. Garrett and I've been doing this for a while, and it's like, you know, who's going to hire this 50-year-old dude? And I hate to sound arrogant, pay me what I feel like I'm worth when I know I can hire somebody else, maybe half his age, pay him a third, and, you know, that'll be fine for now. You know, that's the reality we're all looking at.
Right.
And it's so when people don't want to get back to work, sometimes that it eats at me a little bit, but I got off on a tangent,
but that's not the reality in the food service industry and restaurant industry.
Right.
Now it's like, okay, I'm going to hire anybody that wants to work, and I'm going to pay them handsomely.
Top dollar. Yeah.
You know, please give me, you know, competent, capable people. And they can learn the people skills that are involved with hospitality, because it's like, and I'm the same way, you know, we all have this expectation when we go out, we want to escape the normal meal that we would have at home and go somewhere where somebody like
meets I'm going to cut you off here though. The problem is that we don't have the capacity to give those people the proper training. The ones you don't have the ability to train them properly. So they're just going to be paid handsomely to do a mediocre job and to make the restaurant not succeed, because at the end of the day, people are going to be pissed off because they're paying top dollar, because they have to pay top dollar, because now we're paying the staff top dollar, and we don't have the capacity to train them or teach them, nor do they actually want to be trained. They just want to get paid.
Yeah. It's there's other subjects to touch on, but I really don't know what the solution to that problem is. You know, I would say there's probably some areas that were maybe a little saturated with restaurants. I mean, sure, that happens. That's part of an economic boom, and it's not anybody's fault. I don't want people to go out of business, but there's always some healthy correction of the market, and you can take the pandemic completely out of it. It's bound to happen in some places, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but this is different. You know, there's the market correcting itself, and then there's on top of it. Then there's the permanent attrition, the dearth of lack, or you know, whatever term you want to use, the lack of just skilled labor, skilled mm-hmm. professionals, whatever term you want to use. And it's just going to exacerbate the situation. I hope I'm wrong. I've tried to look at this this entire time and like, you know, is there an opportunity here? Not to be opportunistic, but what's the silver lining? What can we seize on here and make this a better situation for everybody? What is a different way to approach this issue? What is a different way to handle this problem? How can we overcome it? But you know, it's, if the well is dry, the well is dry, right? I don't know what do. Yeah,
it's survival mode, and it still is. And I think that's what a lot of people understand. It's like the places that I deal with and do business with, the ones that are continuing to be able to do it, have had to make dramatic change in how they do it, in terms of like, okay, they're open, but they're, you know, they're not having all the seatings filled during a service, right? They're keeping tables that are closed because they don't have the resources to do that. So they're trying to provide the same experience, but it's still a shoestring. It's still precarious. It's still very tenuous for them. You know, on the outside, it may seem like, oh, these guys are really successful. They're doing great business. There's people here, but they're not turning the same amount of tables that they normally would because they can't. Right. They can't. Don't have the people to do it. They don't have the resources to do it. Yeah. So they're providing the same experience, but at their own cost, at their own profit, at their own, you know, economic benefit.
Right, and eventually that runs out.
To survive, right?
Yeah.
Right. And that's that mathematical equation you were talking about. Eventually, if you're operating at 60% of your normal business, and eventually that other 40% is going to win out, and right. you're just not going to be able to do it. And then you have the guest expectation thing that I mentioned earlier. You know, people come in and they say, well, there's an empty table right there. What do you mean you can't seat me? Like, sure, you can sit there. Just no one's going to be able to serve you just because there's physically a table there for you to sit at doesn't mean you're going to be able to get served or someone's going to be able to cook your food. It's just a physical structure that is available at the moment.
Do you like family style? Because we can do
right. Well, you know, I think maybe, and if I'm skipping ahead, forgive me, but you know, maybe this is like, well, so what does the future look like? We're experiencing some of the change right now mm-hmm. because people have to do it. You know, we'll call it, you know, like Garrett said, survival mode. All right, so let's think about it. There's a lot of restaurants that can do takeout and their food travels well. Then there's a lot of cooking that is just simply needs to be enjoyed on site. You know, like one of my favorite dishes is real classic Napolitana style pizza. Sure, you can do it for delivery, but after it's 10 minutes old, it's over. It's just not the same experience. It's like warm glazed donut, amazing. A 2-day old donut, not the same thing. Even an hour old, it's not the same thing. So there's food that will work great for these delivery services if the restaurant does it on their own or if they use a third party. It works great, but not all food travels well. And that, so I'm a restaurant owner. Do I shift my model completely to being something like, okay, I can be open a few days a week, but I'm really going to rely on to go?
Right.
Not really realistic for a lot of people. You know, if you're like, and
it's
picking
more like anybody, a band-aid, right?
It's
more
exactly. Like, it's a temporary solution, but.
And what all the costs for being able to provide to go food?
Well, that's the thing. You know, it's more packaging. You're paying a third party service to deliver it. So that cuts into the profit.
And the
so
packaging, like, I mean, that goes back to the distribution issues and the, because it's not just the restaurant industry, right? Yeah. It's industries across the world. So, you know, I've seen the price of a takeout container. You know, one of my, you know, we use nicer ones, but it's 47 cents for one container. So you get somebody that gets, you know, six dishes, that's $3, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that's $3 extra cost that the restaurant's absorbing, not charging for. It's across the board. All of that stuff costs more money. So then all of your delivery or takeout costs more money. And, you know, you don't have more coming in, but you're paying more. Same, you're paying more staff, higher wages, and you're paying more for all your paper products and all your cleaning supplies and all that stuff. And the, again, to go back to Garrett's mathematical equation analogy, it just at some point
got to add up. Yeah, it's got to add up. I feel like if I had to take a shot in the dark, restaurants, you know, I'm going to call them higher end restaurants, you know, more like curated menus, more thoughtfully planned out beverage programs, you name it. And, well, and I'm going to use the term fine dining, but I think you get what I'm saying. I feel like it's going to be probably, can we work with 40 seats instead of 80? And can we do a 4-day service and make money? And it's going back to the mathematical equation. I see that being more how things are going to work moving forward, because then it's a smaller space, so typically smaller, whether you own the space or rent the space, should be lower rent because it's just less square footage, period. Less people to work. So that's, you know, it's just lower overhead in general and simplified service. We're not here 7 days a week, even though we may end up working 7 days a week. Our service is now part of the week and we can focus on resting so we're not tired. And you know what? Maybe folks, you can only go out Thursday through Sunday now, you know, and that's a bit of a sliding scale. Maybe they're, you know, open.
There's another like unaddressed part too, as well, is that like, okay, it's also the integration of this business, the food service business, with the whole other aspect of a night out and the entertainment business and all those things. And the part that those other sectors are also suffering more. It's like, okay, you know, we're not going out to see a movie, or we're not going out to see a band. We're not, you know, we're not going to go to the bar after we have dinner and hang out with our buddies or folks that we for a while. So this whole, you know, social interaction that a night out or a meal out at a restaurant was a part of, you know, it might not have been the focal point of the night, but there were three or four other tangents that were
right. It's all part of the experience, right?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah,
and all those things are like, those also are suffering or gone and non-existent. So, you know, the motivation to go out and go do these things has become very restricted or detracted from, in terms of people just don't, you know, it's like get off the couch, go out and have a meal. There's less opportunities for you to do other things in addition to the meal that you're having. And I think that's greatly affected, and particularly what I alluded to earlier in terms of like the demographics or the shift of how it works has changed, particularly, you know, you were asking about the Boston market, like, okay, all of these other things that you would attach to your night out also don't exist anymore and radically.
Yeah, so I didn't even think about that.
Who goes out and goes out to eat And, you know, besides the fact that there's, you know, not the talent to be employed to work in the restaurant itself, you know, you don't have all these other avenues to enjoy as well.
Yeah, I was lucky enough. I got to go, and I'm not plugging any particular band. I got to go see St. Vincent at Thompson's Point a couple of weeks back. There's a great little bar there now. We went, you know, great little wine bar. Went and had that and went and watched the show, and it was just, pardon me, being crass, it's fucking fantastic. It was the first time I really felt like I was out having like an evening again, if that makes any sense. Not like looking over my shoulder, is this okay? Because it's an outside venue. And it was just so great. It was just felt vibrant and like it was just alive, the whole experience. And you know what? It's funny you bring it up. I just did that. I didn't even think about like, hey, we're going to go out to dinner. We're going to go to a movie. We're going to go see a show, whatever. And then you would go to the bar. Maybe you went to the bar beforehand or whatever. And those little things have been eroded. And, you know, the at-home experience is good. It's nice that you have that convenience, but there is no substitute for being there in person. Right. The takeout experience is not the same as being at the restaurant. Right. Or streaming a concert is not the same as being there at the live show. It's still a good experience, but it's...
your night or your afternoon or your agenda of what you're doing, you know? Yeah. So a lot of us are suffering in this business because that agenda is gone. Yeah. You know, there's no agenda to have because these things don't exist, or, you know, you're just not willing to go out and do it. And I mean, God, I'm a musician. I can't tell you how many shows have been canceled, you know, and it's really increased actually, you know, when we're talking about the future, like in the last month, I've seen more and more shows canceled. I've actually benefited that I've been booked replacing somebody that's like, okay, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to play that show. You know, this all contributes to this topic that we're talking about, like, you know, the food industry basically, and where it's going, because they all are hand in hand. It's not just this one thing that happens. They're all part of, like, you know, social living, I guess, as Burning Spear would say, you know,
that's a good one.
We all need that, right? And it's part of what makes us human. It's what humanity is. And I think that whole sector of our lives is suffering a little bit right now through the pandemic, and also, you know, just uncertainty of the future and what's happening, and whether or not, you know, should I go out? Should I not go out? You know, should I wear a mask? Should I not wear a mask? You know, what's the policy here? There's just so many things that are making it more difficult to get back to what we call quote unquote normal, right?
Right. And I feel like we are a year past when we thought we'd be talking about this.
Yep.
Right. Like we all thought, all right, we'll just get through, you know, this time frame, whatever it is, whatever that time was in your mind. I think everybody at this point is just so far beyond that and just over it. But
yep,
it's not going away. I mean, we're all dealing with it from on a personal level, you know, lack of sales, restaurant closings,
general stress,
unemployment, you know, all that stuff. It's all there, and it's still there, whether we're over it or not, it's still there. So like one of the biggest things that I saw from a restaurant perspective was happy hour. I don't know what it's like in Boston or in Maine, but where I'm at, it's non-existent. The bars just don't fill up anymore because people are working from home still. So you don't have that like happy hour bar business where you got, you know, two deep at the bar and everybody's, you know, having drinks and stuff. They're just, people are still home in their pajamas at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday.
Drinking some 1989 cognac, maybe.
Drinking 1989 cognac, yes.
Got out of my pajamas for the show.
it's a sweet tea. He did, but you know, can I ask this question? And if we need to let this segment go, that's fine. But I have to ask both of you because I've been trying to wrap my head around it. What? And I'm going to ask Chef first, so I'm buying you some time, Garrett. But all right. Chef, like, what do you think it's going to look like in a year or so? Like, really, what do you think? Like, this is a restaurant. It's, we'll call it fine dining, not just, you know, takeout fast food. There's nothing wrong with that. But like, you know, this is what most people would consider fine dining, whatever the food is. What do you think that's going to look like? Is it going to be the way that it was pre-pandemic?
Or I don't know that it's ever going to get back to the way that it was. What I think is going to happen is eventually people are going to get back to work. So I think at this point, you know, the government stopped giving out the extra you know, $300 a week and all that stuff. But I think during that time, a lot of those people have saved up a lot of money. So they're not jumping back into work right now. I think a lot of restaurants are going to have to close, though, because the pool of people is just has shrunk. So we've talked about people leaving the industry altogether, and a lot of them are coming back. So I really feel like there's going to have to be less restaurants or smaller restaurants, like you alluded to before. You know, the 80 seat is now a 40 seat. There's still a ton of talented chefs out there. There's great wine people, service staff. They're all still hungry to work and to succeed and to keep this business afloat. So I don't think the industry is going, I mean, the industry is definitely not going away, because there's so many people that are so passionate about it, and they're going to make it work. You know, whether it's the best chefs in the world or the ones that are just extremely passionate about what they do, and the same with the wine industry and everything else, they're not going anywhere, because that's just what they believe in and what they want to have happen. So, I feel like there's going to be less restaurants, and they're going to be smaller size and figure out a new way to have the different overhead and things like that.
Just less people in general, right?
I have no idea.
Less professionals to pull from. Yeah,
sure. But yeah, I mean, that's just my guess. But
yeah, so I'll just ask Garrett the same question. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
You know, I think a lot of what we've been talking about throughout this entire time that we've been doing the podcast is where is this going? What are we going to see a year from now? And you know, some of the discussions maybe the discussions haven't happened yet, but just having that experience of going out and being, first of all, everything costs a little bit more now, right? Yep. I think we're all seeing that, but I feel like that's a proper market correction. Mm-hmm. And in some of our downtime prior to this podcast, Chef Justin and I were discussing it, and he feels like, okay, well, a lot of people don't see it that way. You know, they have this expectation that it's going to cost this and that you're thriving and that you shouldn't be charging this. But, you know, we've all been going out to eat for a long time and not really paying for what it actually costs to eat that food, enjoy that meal, enjoy that service, enjoy all of those people. So in these times when you go out and you see what the prices are now, I'm fully accepting of it. And I think that we're going to see a lot of attrition. I think another thing that will happen is that a lot of the people that are working in the business, you know, sometimes you be in a town and you see like a server be at like this restaurant, and then that server would show up at another restaurant.
Right. Yeah.
Also was like excellent, right? That had the same great food, you know, great reputation, all those things. So maybe some of those people are now going to start relocating, not just within the same state they live in or the same city or same town, but start moving to different geographic areas in the country. That's a possibility too. We may see that as well because of this loss of basically, you know, a workforce. You know, there's a lot of people that have left the business and decided, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to pursue something else.
Right.
But I think there's also a part of it, a segment of folks that are passionate about this business, that love it, and it's in their blood. It runs, you know, runs through their veins. Like it's just like, I need to be in the food and beverage industry. Mm-hmm. Those people may make decisions to really relocate geographically on other areas. So,
I just wonder if the pricing is going to force some of these higher end, you know, call it fine dining, whatever you want to call it, out of the market, because people aren't going to want to pay those prices, and they're going to go, and the chain restaurants are just going to, you know, take over and start to thrive even more.
You know, I think chains are always going to be a reality. I think pricing is always going to push some people out of that market, and I'm using really general terms. I don't know if the demand will go down. I don't think it'll ever totally go away. I think, to use Garrett's term, it's a bit of a correction. Mm-hmm. I think things were artificially low because there was a sort of an abundance of labor to some extent, and also supply. I mean, it was finite, but still, it felt like you could always get more if you needed more. So that helped.
Right.
maybe, you know, kind of compress pricing a little bit. But, you know, I don't think so. I think you're probably going to see a little more growth at both, you know, at the bottom, and a little, I guess, more loss at the top, you know, those higher end restaurants. But they're not going to go away, because I think there's still always going to be a great appreciation for a really great meal out. And it's not just one thing. It's the whole experience. This is our night. This is what we're doing. There's going to be, like Garrett said, there's going to be these things around it. And that need and desire is never going to go away.
Right.
I think we hit a nerve. Restaurants really, and God, I'm trying not to make this sound cheesy, but restaurants really are the lifeblood of our culture. When you think about it, there's so many options to go. Like if you like Indian food, if you like Italian food, whatever cuisine you're into, I don't need to list them all off. You can have that experience, you know, or you can just go to a great pub that, you know, they've got beer and they make a great burger or whatever. But that is just, you can do, you have so many different experiences that need is going to put the market back into a healthy state at some point. But I think we're probably 2 or 3 years away. And I think it may look very different for a while, like less nights to go out to choose from. You know, maybe it is a Thursday through Sunday model. Lunches, I mean, lunches are hard to find now. Who's doing lunch service, really? Even in big cities. Well, maybe it's even worse in big cities. So, you know, that'd be my wild guess. I feel like in a couple of years, it'll feel very normal again. I think there'll be less restaurants, but that's not necessarily bad, even though other people, you know, they lost out, unfortunately. But, you know, it's going to come back, but I think we're a ways off.
Mm-hmm. It's going to come back different. And I don't think it's going to, like, your original question, like, where do you see it being a year from now? It's going to be a version of what it is now, maybe slightly better. I mean, like, I think you even said this in subsequent conversation that we've had here. It's like, we're really like 2 to 3 years away from something, you know. There were people that were speculating like, oh, well, you know, we get the vaccines and things go back to normal and there's, you know, people can go out and things will bounce back really, really quickly. And we saw, like, we did see like a quick bounce back for some things, but they were not sustained and they weren't lasting. And I think we're still a ways off from that. Not to be like, you know, the guy that's with the big dark rain cloud covering the conversation. But it is the reality of the situation. You know, until society gets a grip on how we address this pandemic situation and the social implications of us being all together as a group, as a society, we've still got a lot of things to figure out. And that's going to impact the restaurant business tremendously, because sharing a meal with somebody is like, it's like a basic thing of humanity,
right? You know? Exactly. It's fundamental.
It goes back thousands of years.
Right. And now we're doing it in our families and our individual units. Like, that has not stopped, but for society to function and for all of us to live and get along, we have to do it with each other, not just our individual tribes that we're with. Right. So, you know, that's been the greatest effect on this, even besides the economic realities or anything. It's just a mere socialization factor has been so impacted at this important thing that we go through, this ritual in our life and how we interact with society.
That's going to sort of wrap up this little
uplifting episode of Culinary Road.
let's not end this without trying to plug the Speed Fossil, because that's one of those industries that have been affected pretty greatly, as well as the music industry and concerts and playing and all that stuff. So Speed Fossil is coming out with a new LP and a new record here soon. And, you know, you've been performing live recently. I know I sent you a couple of messages recently with your, right before you head out to your shows, which probably bad luck, but we definitely want to mention that Speed Fossil is alive and well.
And that's the same thing. It's the same thing as the restaurant business. I can tell you, you know, like, going out, people are just, they're not motivated to go out and see music. And when you go out and you have an audience out there, it's like, okay, you have to wear a mask, you have to show your proof of vaccination. You know, it just, it kind of takes away from the spirit of the occasion of like, okay, I just want to go out and have a good time and not have to worry about anything. You know, whether seeing music or having a meal, it's like, it's the same. You want that same experience. You know, I think those times are going to come back. We just all have to be patient, and we all have to do our part as citizens and people on this earth to help get us there. You know?
Right. So in the meantime, until people can get out there, where can they find your music?
On the interwebs. So speedfossil.com is the best place to go. And it's all there. And there's a new record coming, hopefully soon. It's done. You know, there's someone who's going to put it out, and we're just trying to finalize all that now. So
exciting stuff.
So yeah,
you're going to need something good to listen to, folks. So
yeah. It makes some predictions, not Speed Fossil. No.
And you can also find all the Speed Fossil music on every episode of the Culinary Road podcast. So we're always happy to feature Speed Fossil on every episode as well.
God bless.
Let's wrap up this section. But Garrett, it was great to have you on here again. And you know, we'll call upon you anytime we have a topic that, you know, we feel like we need a third person's perspective on. And this was one of those that, you know, I just wanted to get your thoughts on it as well, obviously, as well as Fred's and myself. But, you know, it's always good to get that sort of extra vision or extra idea of what everyone else is dealing with in different regions and different areas. So it was great to have you on. Always great to see you, and I look forward to catching up here in the not so distant future.
Yeah, I love being the extra guy, and it was actually, I mean, provocative in terms of like, you know, these are things that have to be addressed. And I think a lot of times we don't talk about it, and we just kind of like, oh, well, you know, this is what the situation is, but this is good. This is like a healthy discussion.
Right.
And hopefully people that are listening to the podcast and take the time to be involved in this also feel the same way, because you know, we're all in it together. We are.
By the way, I've got a great idea, because people couldn't see this. We were all trying to get it together technologically speaking before we connected and did the show. But Garrett was searching for something through his many wings of his house, and he landed in his cellar, and the cellar looks pretty amazing. So I've got a great idea for the next time you're on: the lifespan of a great wine. And here's why it's a great idea. I'm within driving distance of you. I'm going to come to your house, and you and I are just going to open a few bottles, and we'll obviously connect with Justin over Zoom, and you and I can say, yeah, this one's not quite peaking, but it's awfully good. Or maybe this one's a little over the hill.
Well, maybe we're
like 30 or 40 wines.
Let's make sure we plan this out properly, and you ship me a couple of those bottles, and we can taste them all together.
You know what? We'll take pictures, and you'll know what bottles you need to buy.
Great. I think what we need to do is we need to buy Justin a plane ticket and just say, look, we're going to open all this stuff. And I'm sorry, but you're book.
So, well, you know what? You're right. We have our own private chef. Okay. He's right.
All right.
Done.
I'm in. I will definitely cook for booze. I'm always in for that.
We'll cook for booze. All right. That's enough. I rambled. Sorry.
All right. Well, thanks again, Garrett. Great to have you on the program as always. And, you know, hopefully, the industry moving forward is not as grim as maybe we painted it to be.
Right. It's not grim. It's just going to be different.
It's just different. Sure. Yeah. It's just different.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take your word on that.
Mr. Speed Fossil, until next time.
All right.
Ciao.
All right, we're on to the wrap up. That was our discussion with Garrett Vandermolen. And, you know, normally we have discussions about, you know, specific food and beverage topics and things like that. But, you know, we really, for a reason, had Garrett on the show again. And again, he's been on here. This is his third time appearing on the Culinary Road, and certainly not the last. He's a great guest, very dynamic, has great opinions. And that's really why I wanted him on this episode in general, because, you know, we're dealing with a little more heavier topic than we normally would deal with in just the state of restaurant industry and where we're all going. It was, again, also good to hang out with Garrett and have a couple of drinks via Zoom and shoot the shit a little bit. But that brings us to our Ask a Pro section, which, you know, we kind of wanted to tie it all into a little bit to what we've just been discussing. But Fred mentioned during our talk with Garrett, kind of getting out of the everyday hustle and bustle of the restaurant industry, you're still in the industry to a certain degree. I mean, you're not working in a restaurant, but you're still dealing with restaurants on a daily basis. So you kind of got out to a certain degree. And, yep. You know, just, I think enlighten our listeners why that was the decision you made and the difficulty in probably making that decision, because you were entrenched in the industry as well as I am and have been. And, you know, what made you kind of jump ship?
It's a pretty big question, and I'm not going to take an hour to answer it. But I still orbit the industry because it's the industry is the reason I have a job. But you know, you and I work together. There's an age difference. We don't need to say how much, but it's enough.
It's minor, but it's there.
Minor. It's what is it? It's 10, 15 years?
Yeah, not quite. Like 12.
Not quite close, but it's so you get my drift anyway. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, you know, we've talked about it a ton of times on this show. You know, it's a lot of work to do it well, and it takes a lot of energy. I feel like when you're really trying to do something pretty great when it comes to food, you're kind of like you're building from scratch every single day, because you know that's how the kitchen works, and then you know right. Service. You kind of get a routine and a rhythm a little bit, but you have to treat it that way. And that it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just saying, hey, this food is really good. Here's something really good to drink. There's a lot more to it. And there's always, pun intended, a few little fires to put out. And, you know, to me, you know, that career has a shelf life to some extent. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't want to burn out. And we all get a little fried from time to time. Anybody working at all, whatever the profession is, sure. you can get burned out just because it can get, you know, it's tough. If you really care about what you do, at some point you might push yourself a little too much. You might invest a little too much in it. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but you're trying to achieve something, right. You know, whether it's a promotion, whether it's an ideal of what you want it to look like, the business and so on and so on. And I was getting to that point to where I really loved the people I worked with, but I got Sunday, Monday off. I was able to set up my schedule like that. But like, you know, I wrote the newsletter on Monday, you know, for the shop, and that, you know, people think, oh, a newsletter is not that big a deal. That's hours of work.
Oh yeah.
But you don't want to just put out like, hey, this is $5 and we got this bottle of wine in. It's $11. It's delicious. Buy it. Hugs and kisses, Fred. Now you got to put some thought and effort into it, because people, you want them interested.
Right.
And we had a pretty big, I think we had like a couple of thousand people in the newsletter. So there's some responsibility there. So I had a day off. So like come Sunday night, I would start to like, oh my God, my weekend's over. Like,
yeah, I got a case of the Mondays, right?
You got a case of the Monday. Yeah. And then Monday I'm working all day. And then like Tuesday, I'm right back at it. And so I was getting to a spot where I was kind of resenting the business a little bit, a little more stressed out. And I was short with people who didn't deserve it, even though, you know, I was trying to push them.
Are you talking about me?
No. I was you know, and I had all the time. Yeah, I had a really good crew that, you know, you know, kind of came along for the ride. They did a great job, and it was time for me to hand the reins over to somebody else. And I still love the business and didn't want to be totally disconnected from it. And when Lorenzo decided to leave the restaurant we were working at, who's my mentor, taught me a lot about wine, pretty much everything I really know, the foundation anyway. I fell in love with wine and the culture and everything. And I knew I could do something else besides being on the floor at the restaurant, being on the floor at the shop all day, just selling wine directly to people. There was more to it. And that kind of led me into, you know, working for an importer. You can work for a distributor and be a wine salesperson there. And salesperson almost kind of takes it down a notch, and there's nothing wrong with being a salesperson, but it's not like selling used cars. I mean,
it's like an ambassador more, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You're like that's a very good way of putting it. Garrett is a really good example. Mm-hmm. It's very well spoken, really loves what he's talking about, and he ties it right into food. And they do not, you know, exist in bubbles. Food and wine are meant to be together. Good food, good drink. That's all part of the experience. And so I'm still connected in that way. But to me, it was a path I could learn more, I could travel more, and I had more of a regular schedule. Right. I still do wine dinners, not as often as we used to, different times. But when things were, let's say, not the way they are right now, but more normal, you know, I was doing easily 8-9 events a month. So that would eat into a lot of the weekends. So I was still really working 6 days a week. You know, people reach out when they need stuff, when they reach out, you know, texting is, it's almost like a 24-hour thing. So
right.
Working as much, but not as taxing because I'm not tied to like one thing.
Right.
And
yeah, you're not inside the same four walls every day.
Exactly. And so it was to me, it felt like a natural progression.
Sure.
It's weird. I've got an account, really good account. Love the guy. And I took over for him a few years ago. And I went to go visit him. This is a couple of years back. And he was getting a big plate delivery. They needed new plates for the restaurant or just more. And I'm helping him unload from the truck. And like, I'm putting him down and I look in the, and the whole dining room's empty. It's a beautiful view. I look right out on the water. I'm like, ah. Oh, man, I really missed this. I got that tinge for like 10 seconds and I turned right around and like looked and like, I'm seeing somebody at the schedule saying, no, you got to be here. I can hear them on the phone saying, look, you got to get your shift covered. And I'm like, instantly, I'm all set.
Don't miss it anymore.
So it's funny how it tugs at you like that. So don't get me wrong. I really enjoyed it, but it was time for me to hand the reins over to somebody else. And it was time for me to move on and pursue something else. That's why I did it. I think to each their own, you know, we're seeing people make those assessments and kind of judgments on where they're going with their careers in this business. And that was part of the attrition we talked about, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think some of that's naturally going to happen as you get older in life. Maybe you want to do more. Maybe you just want to invest even more in it. It's different things to different people. You can still do what you love, but maybe it's time to do it differently. And that's kind of how I saw it at the time.
Sure.
And I'm thankful I made the decision. It wasn't an easy decision to make. I really liked working with you, your wife. She was the whole reason the store was successful. Without her, I don't think we would have had any food. It would just been a wine shop, which would have been fine, but really one dimensional. So it was, you know, it was bittersweet, but I'm glad I did it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's
I said I wouldn't take an hour to answer your question. I'm full of shit.
And here we are, an hour and a half later.
You're going to have to edit that down.
But no, it's, I mean, when you have a passion in whatever industry it is, whether it's food, beverage, or anything, it's, you know, to make the step to move out of that for whatever reason is, you can't just run in or jump into that decision. It's something that you really need to think about.
Yeah, well,
and consult people that you trust and, you know, take advice from the people that you care about.
It kind of becomes part of you, right?
Right.
Like you put together a menu, you put together an event, or you name it, and you.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly didn't get into this for the hours,
for the pay, the lifestyle, and the pay,
lifestyle, the weekends, the holidays. None of that's, you know, that's not why I'm in what I'm in. You know, by the time we release this podcast, I don't know what I'm going to be doing next, as the restaurant just shut down, but.
Well, you know, we talked about Stuntman, right? That was
one of them.
But we should save that for another show.
I might be too old for that now, so we'll see. We'll see.
Tuck and roll, man. Tuck and roll.
So as always, make sure you are following us on our various Instagram accounts. The Culinary Road is at culinary.rd. Fred is at FMIV, and I am at Chef Melnick. And then definitely check out the website. That's so a new and improved website. www.culinaryroad.com. It's culinaryrd.com. You know, I have information on there on upcoming Italy trips, as well as, you know, we're going to be adding some cooking classes and demos and some wine stuff from Fred on there as well, in addition to the podcast and links on there. And you can leave us a message and everything else on there as well. So
sort of one-stop shopping, right?
Yeah, that's the idea. So we're sort of building that as we go. So it's a work in progress, and I think it will be for years to come. But you know, podcast is kind of step one of culinaryroad.com, and here we are. So make sure you check us out on there, send messages and all. But Fred, I think that wraps up another episode of the Culinary Road podcast. Anything to add?
No, it was great having Garrett on, as you said, the third chair. It was a good discussion, and I'm looking forward to the next one, sir.
Absolutely.
You then.
We'll do it all again next week.
Sounds good.
Thanks, sir. Yeah.